This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So the first story we look at is the RBI, which has announced rate cut of 25 basis points. And many feel that it's a very cautious sort of move. So do you think it's going to stimulate investment and growth?
I think this was anticipated. The markets had sort of factored it in. It was something the Reserve Bank should have done long ago. The unfortunate thing is, as a columnist for Bloomberg, I think it was, pointed out, a commercial bank, which was SBI, actually took the lead. Because you look at what happened. State Bank of India, on its own volition, cut the savings rate by 50 basis points.
Right.
And it was forced to do that because that's the monetary situation right now. Especially after demonetization, banks are flush with funds.
Right.
You can't afford to continue doing this. Inflation is under control. Even core inflation, which previously was stubborn, continues to be under control. So I think RBI should have done this some time back. That's one part of the question, right? The second part of the question, two levels. First level, consumers. Does this mean home loans are going to get cheaper? Does this mean car loans are going to get cheaper? Does this mean education loans are going to get cheaper? No, because I think even some of the earlier cuts have not really been transmitted. And whatever changes will be very, very marginal. They're not going to get cheaper anytime soon. Good news is they won't get expensive, right? That's one. Second part, is this going to see this huge increase in investment and consequently growth? Not so sure, because the factors driving that are very different.
Right.
And we've pointed this out in a couple of our editorial page pieces. I think the ability of monetary policy to affect structural interventions in growth and other things is declining.
Right.
There are other factors that weigh in on that. So I think that's at a different level.
Right.
So will there be more? Ideally, I would have liked to see a 50 basis point cut, and then you could have not done it for some time. But RBI has been overly cautious, I think. So I think there is room for one more cut at least.
Right.
As to when it'll come, I hope it comes soon rather than, you know, it'd be good if it comes sooner than later. But a 50 basis point cut would have been good, would not have been out of place, right? Would have been proportionate to what the situation warrants at this stage.
Right.
A 25 basis point cut is neither here nor there.
True.
I think RBI is playing it far too safe.
Great. Moving on, we come to a story from the e-commerce world where Snapdeal walked out of sale with Flipkart and it's now going to rebrand itself as Snapdeal 2.0.
No, no, it's not going to rebrand itself. That's the new strategy.
Yeah,
I think the company's
strategy.
Name is going to remain the same.
Yeah.
See, this is one of those blow hot, blow cold deals, right? I mean, for a year now, I think everyone had been guessing about will it happen, will it not happen, all those things. Here are the facts. Facts are, here is a company which was once a unicorn, which was once valued at 6.5 billion and is now valued at less than a billion,
right?
So it's no longer a unicorn. You have the largest investor, which is SoftBank, which has got a lot of money, right? I mean, let's not forget the close to $100 billion software vision fund, and all their investments are going to come from that, whatever investments they make. You have a hugely rich, I mean, well-heeled investor, which has realized that this has gone wrong and we need to make bets elsewhere. SoftBank, like all other good companies at that scale, when you're making investments at that level, the thing you have to watch out for is that you don't lose, which basically means you have to back everyone.
Yeah.
Right? The only way to not lose in a race is to back every horse in the race. And then do a little bit of probability-based gaming and to back the one that's likely to bet a lot more than anyone else. So SoftBank has a huge stake in Alibaba. So one of the bets is covered because Alibaba's India strategy is still not clear. But at some point in time, it will become very clear and they're going to be big players. The other horse in the race is really Flipkart. And I think SoftBank wanted to sort of put some money in Flipkart and still does. Initially, it was thought that they would effect this merger of Snapdeal and Flipkart, get Flipkart to buy Snapdeal and also put in a little bit of money in Flipkart. Now, they'll have to go to plan B. So I'm told they're evaluating an investment in Flipkart, and over the next few weeks, we will get to know whether that investment happens.
Right.
My own sense is that it will happen. But what the Snapdeal promoters seem to have done is that they seem to have convinced the owners, or I think they seem to have tired out the owners, because one constant thing that I heard that was that everyone was tired of going back and forth, that they have a future on their own, which is what Snapdeal 2 is, which is they're speaking about different kind of brands, different kind of reach, to get different kind of merchants onto the platform.
Right.
Still not clear, but What is clear is that standalone, what made this possible was the fact that FreeCharge, the payments business owned by Snapdeal, was sold to Axis.
True.
So they got around 325 crores. So you have cash which has come in, and then you can use that cash.
Right.
Snapdeal claims that with this amount of cash, they don't need any more equity infusion and that they can break even at an operational level in 12 to 18 months. Interesting. I have no idea. I have not looked at the numbers, but it is an interesting proposition.
Right.
So what we now know is that Flipkart has walked away from the deal. SoftBank has moved out, and not moved out, SoftBank has said, okay,
we
go
respect
ahead.
Respect your decision.
Do whatever you want to do, right? So now the ball is in Snapdeal's court, the promoter's court, and they'll have to prove that they can do what they want to.
But what does it mean for Flipkart? Because for them also, it seems to be beneficial that this has not worked out, because
I don't know. You never know about these mergers, right? Because Flipkart's previous deals have all been pretty good for it. Right? I mean, you look at the history of this company, and many of the acquisitions they've made have worked out well for them. So who's to say, right? I mean, this is entirely in the realm of the hypothetical. The Snapdeal acquisition, despite the fact that what I wasn't clear on was what Snapdeal was bringing to the table, might have worked out very well for them. Maybe they would have got SoftBank to invest in them at more attractive terms.
True.
Right? Because in some ways, they were doing SoftBank a favor by taking over Snapdeal. So there might have been a better deal possible. So I don't know. But the fact is, now it's over. And Flipkart has to do what it has to do, right? I mean, it has to compete with Amazon, which means it has to keep growing even as it tries to become profitable. And that's the big fight that's happening in the e-commerce market in India right now, right? There's Flipkart and there's Amazon. And at some point in time, there will be Alibaba in one form or the other.
So we have somebody who says that if news is to be believed, Snapdeal is also going to lay off a major chunk of its employees. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing, right? I mean, the fact is, even had Snapdeal been acquired by Flipkart,
they might have done this.
They would have had to do this, right? I mean, these employees would have had to go. And I think many of the employees saw the writing on the wall, and there has been organic attrition over the time. But even this new Snapdeal too, we don't know the details. There have only been these unsubstantiated reports that sources and other people have told us, have told other people, because the company itself has not shared any detailed information on this, that it would involve a significant shrinking in the workforce. Some people say by almost 50%, some people say it could be even more. And that is unfortunate, because in many of these deals, but in any consolidation of this nature, I think it's the employees who get the raw deal. So my only hope is that employees who have stock are able to exit in some decent way. That's not going to happen now, right? Because there's no deal. The other thing is that employees who are being asked to go get what is their legal due, right? In terms of severance and other things. It's always unfortunate when people lose jobs, especially when the job environment is
as
the
it
way
is.
It is.
True. Since we're on the job issue, the other big story is about IT companies shrinking their workforce. And, you know, latest figures show that Cognizant itself has, you know, the workforce has declined by 4,400, and the top four IT companies have seen shrinking of their workforce in a, you know, abysmally.
Not abysmally, but
I mean, it's disturbing, the trend.
Yeah, it is. So, see, out of the top five companies, the top five Indian companies, because Cognizant is a US company, much of its operations are in India. The top five Indian companies, their workforce has effectively declined by around 1,800, which is significant. Cognizant employs around 2.5 lakh people, but its workforce has shrunk by around 4,000 in the last 3 months. And even for the other companies, this comparison is for the last 3 months. So you take their workforce at the end of March, you take their workforce at the end of June. They've all shrunk their workforce. Why is this happening? It's a reflection of the bigger change which is happening in the IT space. We've spoken about it previously. First change that's happening is really that a lot of work is getting automated. The second change that's happening is that people are beginning to use AI. People are beginning to focus on non-linear ways of growing their business, which means they don't really need engineers and workers to grow their business. Previously, it was all time and work. I mean, that's how it used to happen. It's no longer the case now. The third one is also the fact that this H-1B thing, you can't leave that out, right? I mean, there is that issue. So you'll have to see whether that, the visa issue and what's happening in the US, has also played a role in this.
So what is...
But it is a disturbing trend.
Yeah.
Because many of the engineering colleges in this country completely focused on IT. So much so that at the peak of the IT boom, I've had CEOs of large, respected engineering companies bemoan the fact that even civil and mechanical and chemical engineering engineers from these engineering colleges are landing up in IT companies,
right?
And that they don't have anyone to hire from. But over the past few years, there's been a lull. They started hiring fewer and fewer. They started deferring the joining date. And now it's reached a stage where unless you are a really top-notch engineering college, and I think there are probably 10 to 15 good engineering colleges in the country, the others, and I'm told there are around 4,000.
Yeah,
the others, they're there, but I'm not sure the people graduating from there are readily going to find jobs. So it is a crisis in the engineering education sector also. It's unlikely to change anytime soon because the IT companies will, going forward, hire fewer and fewer.
Right.
They may hire different kind of resources. They may hire more expensive resources because you look at the kind of things that they will be doing. High-end data analytics, right? I mean, IoT. You will need different quality of engineers to do this. And you'll end up having to pay them more because they're not going to be doing routine application maintenance work.
True. So what does it mean for the engineering graduates? Do they need to reskill or, you know?
Engineering curriculum has needed
revamp
for a long time in this country, right? I mean, it's not really happened. You need to really focus on things that will help them sort of hit the ground running. And you look at what the IT companies were doing. At their peak, companies like Infosys and TCS, and they still do, but at their peak, they were running full-fledged colleges of their own, except they were not called colleges.
Hmm.
So you would graduate from an engineering program, get a job in a company like Infosys, and then go and do almost a one-year training program, and they would train you, they would conduct tests, and then effectively your job would depend on your performance in those tests. So they were putting you through the grind all through. And why were they doing it? Because the quality of education, even in some really good colleges, wasn't as good as it should be. These people weren't job ready, they weren't work ready.
Right.
And that's the problem in the IT sector in India.
Right. So the other story we are looking at is also related. It's to do with education. The Lok Sabha just approved the IIM bills, giving autonomy to the IIMs. And it's also thinking about giving autonomy to, you know, private B schools.
Yeah, not autonomy, but not regulating them as much as it regulates them. Right? Okay, first let's take the issue of the IIMs. Yes, the IIMs need more autonomy simply because they are centers of excellence. Why are they centers of excellence? Not for any other reason, but over a period of time, initially there were few IIMs. And these attracted the best and the brightest in the country. So there was this selection process which was very difficult. And as a result, you got only great people there.
Right.
And as a result, these schools created many of the managerial talent that today runs Indian companies and also several international companies.
Right.
And then over a period of time, the government said we should open more IIMs. Some of the newer IIMs we all know. No one says it. Some of the newer IIMs are not as good as the older ones. They're pretty bad infrastructurally. and I think you need to really focus on doing that. Now, you'll have to look at what really needs to be done. What do you really need to build a great B school? In my opinion, three things. The first one, you need good infrastructure. Infrastructure is actually easy. Infrastructure is just a question of throwing money. We're talking about hard infrastructure. It's just a question of throwing money at things. The second thing you need is soft infrastructure, which is your teaching methodology as well as the kind of faculty you can attract. Very important.
True.
Now, are you really going to get world-class faculty if you're going to pay them salaries according to UGC skills and salaries according to what the HRD ministry tells you to? And three, emphasis on consulting and research, which will happen only if there is a level of personal aggrandizement and personal enrichment involved. I mean, a professor is going to do it, you know, work in consulting and in research if it can help him in some way. Sure, it should also help the institute. And I think these are the broad areas where I think these schools should be pretty much allowed to do their own thing. Does the current bill do it? To some extent, not to the extent that I would have liked to see, but I think it's a step forward. But simultaneously, there are also these back channel efforts to put in reservation in some of the IIMs at the faculty level and all that. I'm all for affirmative action. The reason for that is simple. I'm from Tamil Nadu. First 17 years of my life I spent in the state. It was the first state in the country to have 69% reservation in educational institutions for people from the underprivileged classes. I saw live, and over the years I've seen the benefits of this, right? I mean, so I'm all for affirmative action. I think it works. Although, of course, I have a view that all affirmative actions in India need need to be, you need to have a best by date, right? I mean, you can't do this forever.
True.
You probably do it for a generation or two and then right. you move them out.
Right.
The problem in India is that they seem to be perpetual. But anyway, but they're insisting on reservation at the faculty level.
Mm.
We have to study this carefully.
Yeah.
But we also have to study this carefully from the supply side. And I think I have a point of view on that. You really need to make sure that the people doing the teaching are really top notch. That's what you really need to do. That's what's going to create the kind of managers that this country needs. As for the private schools, a lot of the private management education in this country is quite simply racketeering. You have a handful of good private schools. The rest of them are run purely for money.
Yeah.
They're not run for any other reason. And these need to be regulated, right? Sure, the All India Council for Technical Education may not have been the best regulator of these schools.
Right.
But these schools need to be regulated because you don't want young people in this country to be cheated.
Mm.
You do not want their parents spending huge amounts of money on substandard education. I know it goes against the ethos of our newspaper's free market philosophy to call for more regulation, but I think when it comes to private education institutions in this country, the government has to keep a close eye.
Mm.
The ministry has to keep a close eye. So again, one will have to look at the fine print of the exact regulatory flexibility that they are giving some of the private institutions. Because let's also not forget this fact, and you know, people normally hate to say this, but a lot of engineering private colleges, a lot of private B schools in this country are all run by trusts and societies started by politicians. And not all of them have the best interests of students at mind. Some of them do.
Mm.
Some of them are really high-minded, and all credit to them.
Right.
Many of them are not. And I think we need to regulate them.
Right. So we need to wait and watch what happens on that.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.